Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody. Here District, I'm the captain of this vessel on this fantastic voyage. We've already set sail. Exhibition season has started. Marcus Johnson, my son Chris Johnson, the only father and son combination to win a national championship at the same school. What's up, Chris? How you living? Everything good?
I'm doing great, baby. How are you?
I'm doing really, really good. We're going to talk about the Bucks. As of this recording, they have played the one exhibition game against the Miami Heat. Next segment, we're going to talk to Kyle Kuzma's basketball Svengali, guy by the name of Clint Parks. And you know, Chris, your workout guy, those are guys that you stay connected to the rest of your life, especially Clint and Kyle have been together since Kyle was a redshirt freshman at Utah. So it's been a long, long time. But first, the Bucks, this first exhibition game. And I tell you, two numbers, and I mentioned this to Doc Rivers yesterday, as a matter of fact. The two numbers, man, that just really impressed me. 41 three-point attempts with a Bucks team that put an emphasis on, you know, hiking up the three-point attempts this season. 41 for the game. But also, Chris, 13 turnovers at halftime. Halftime of that Heat game, 13 turnovers for 17 points, 23 turnovers for the game. That was another point of emphasis that this team wanted to focus on coming into this season. And so from that standpoint, nice exhibition games. They did get the win against Miami. You don't put a whole lot of stock in that. But if you're playing the game, you keep it scored, you want to win the basketball game. But those two numbers, I thought, Chris, really, but you know, it's early. They got some more exhibition games to play. Detroit coming up, Chicago coming up. So we'll see how they fare in those areas against those teams. But for a start, in terms of just what you focused on overall, before we get specific with players, they accomplished their goal.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the heels of John Horst's mandate and what they're trying to accomplish in terms of three-point field goal rate, yes, that was accomplished. Now, as a byproduct of trying to accomplish these things and having a very young roster playing meaningful minutes, 23 turnovers are bound to happen. But that's what I think preseason is for. This is the process the Bucks are sort of – it's the system's being installed, MJ. And so during this process, you're going to have some bumps in the road. You're going to go through some kind of, you know, some down.
Well, they forced 23. They forced Miami into 23 for the game.
Oh, they forced 23. Yeah.
I think Bucks had like 15, I think, for the game.
So 23 forced turnovers.
Yeah. That's 13 at halftime. 13 at halftime.
So that speaks to what the eye test showed me as I was watching the game in the first half. Without getting too deep into the numbers, when you watch the Bucks in that first half, they looked, I mean, completely quicker defensively. You just had a feeling of just watching. You don't have the same slow recoveries, the late helps. I mean, you got guys that felt like they were locked in, and the pressure was happening a lot further up the floor and was being sustained a lot longer over the course of each quarter. So that's what jumped out to me. I mean, without getting into individual players, the style of play, again, it's a work in progress, but I could see the vision, I could see the system, and I like where the Bucks have started.
Well, to validate your basketball savantness, what the Bucks are doing, you talk about closeouts and everything being quicker. They're even playing more off-ball help side defense to really plug up the driving lanes on the strong side, relying on those young legs to be able to get back out on skip passes, to be able to close out without getting beat, to be able to stay in front of players. But that's what young legs do for you. And that gives Greg Buckner, their defensive coordinator, a lot more options to kind of create the defense that he kind of created in Cleveland when he was there. But that team became one of the toughest teams in the league.
No, I laugh because that's just such a great point. It's like having a bunch of really good, like in baseball, the center fielder that can cover, that can play kind of certain ways, and you can shade a certain way because you know you got a guy that can make that up. Or I don't know, it's the shift in the infield or whatever, the shortstop. Right. But I don't know if that even is relevant for this, but I feel like what you saw was obviously guys that took a little bit more gambles but could make up for it with athleticism. Dude, I mean, I'm excited about the possibilities defensively. But also, like, imagine, like, the lineups that you can run. I mean, we saw guys that fit together very well that I didn't think would fit together well, Ryan Rollins, Cole Anthony being one of them. I didn't know how that was going to look, but I was pleasantly surprised with how they look and the chemistry that's already being developed.
Yeah, without question. Again, a lot more versatility, a lot more potential for different combinations. So you mentioned a guy. Let's start out with Ryan Rollins. And he, Giannis, I think, shared about him publicly in terms of watching him play against the Miami Heat and how impressed and how the game has slowed down for Ryan Rollins. And this is a Ryan Rollins when he started a few games when Dame was down last year that averaged almost 11 points a game, shot 44-45% from the three-point line. He played well.
Yeah, we saw
but it. He's even better this year, and that's on the heels of a shoulder surgery that had sidelined him for quite a bit of time. So, we're not even seeing the best version, is my point, of Ryan Rollins right now, but it's like he hit the ground running. That bodes well for the Bucks this season.
Yes, it does. My thing with Rollins is the more that he could, on the defensive side of the ball, create these sort of basketball events, right? A tip, a deflection, get a steal, cut off a guy, come behind, poke, challenge a shot, block a shot. Like, if he's playing that style of basketball, his value on the floor, it's going to be hard to get him off. The shoulder thing that you mentioned, I feel like that him slowing down, him taking his time, him playing with a lot more patience is a direct result of the injury. You come back off an injury, sometimes, you can't really go full speed, and sometimes that's a good thing for you to be able to slow the game down and to use your head more than your athleticism.
Yeah. So, I thought the guys, the Miles Turner and now one thing I did notice, and I want your take on this too. One thing I did notice in the Miami Heat game, and this is an Eric Spoelstra special. The Bucks started the triumvirate, Gary Trent Jr., Kevin Porter Jr., and A.J. Green. They went at A.J. Green. They targeted. Did you pick up on that? They went at him the first four or five possessions. Andrew Wiggins, Jaime Jaquez, whoever it was.
And the thing about it, if AJ's not fouling in those situations, right? Yeah. If he's playing solid defense, you got to live with that. Like, you're not going to get hurt by that. I think you get hurt or burnt by that if he starts fouling, or if it's something like where he's just absolutely too short to really make a difference on the block. But I saw that, and I expect more teams to come at the Bucks if they did start that lineup. I had a question for you about just your overall thoughts on Kevin Porter Jr.'s performance. It looked like he was ironing some things out. What did you think about his performance against Miami?
At 15 minutes, 10 points, 4 assists. He was good. He was good. Now, he started off a little slow. I mean, in terms of just quality of shots that he was attempting early on.
Right.
But once he kind of settled down, he got that, going to his right, kind of that little floater game, that mid-range game, he got that working. And I thought his focus and his connection defensively was there from the start. And that's always a big key. He and Gary Trent Jr. and AJ, when they're on the court with Giannis, I mean, they force almost 17 turnovers a game. And that's one of the things that you've got to really kind of keep using to your advantage. So I thought KPJ, jumping passing lanes, being a pest. Now here's the deal. So by the time we record again next week, we would have played the Pistons and the Bulls. So now you get a Cade Cunningham, who had a 20-point first half against Memphis. This is going to be the big test for me, just to see kind of how we match up against those bigger guards, those offensively talented guards like the Cade Cunninghams. Can KPJ, at his size and girth mainly, does he have the strength to kind of effectively deal with that? So that's the fascinating part of the preseason.
I think when you have a situation like when a guy like KPJ is playing against Cade Cunningham and some of these other guys. Who has he got with Chicago? Kobe White, maybe?
Yeah, Kobe White.
Okay,
so
he's playing with these
Buzelas,
6'4 and up guy.
Josh Giddey.
So KPJ, the difference, and I say the difference between like KPJ and maybe say Dame. Dame is a proven guy. He might not necessarily get up for those type of matchups in the preseason. KPJ is going to be up for these matchups. KPJ
I agree.
Will get up for these matchups. And so that's why I'm loving this guy right now, because I know what time it is. Like, it's not going to be one of these things where we're going to be just chilling on the preseason. he's going to come out with something to prove. The other thing about KPJ that you talk about his shot selection, he didn't come down. How many threes did he take? Because I don't remember him coming down with a pull-up three. I don't remember him coming down just kind of bop, 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 pulling up. I don't know how many threes he took.
Zero. None.
So he didn't take no threes. So look, he didn't take no threes, MJ. So look, shot selection is improving already game one. You can talk about where he got his shots from, but when you look at KPJ, you got to evaluate him on how he's going to score and then how he's going to fit with Giannis. He's already implementing a sort of mindset. I think him and Doc are on the same page. Doc has a direction that he wants KPJ to go, places on the floor he wants him to score from, places on the floor he wants him to minimize shots from. So I think that for me was a nice development to kind of see was KPJ's shot selection that first game.
No, without question. Mm-hmm. He didn't take a three. AJ was 3 for 8, but good quality shots.
Got
eight good 3-point attempts. Gary Trent Jr. took 3.
Not enough. Not enough.
He played 13 minutes. You know, he played 13 minutes.
So but still, minutes. Get up 5. Yeah, but I feel you.
Remember this, that the Bucks as a team, let me double check this to make sure my numbers are correct, but they shot 32%. They'll shoot much better than that. But they got up 41 3-point attempts without Giannis being on the floor.
Woo.
Without no gravitational pull of Giannis drawing 2 and 3 defenders to him and kicking out blind passes to different shooters. Man.
And to your point, MJ, maybe the 13 for 41 or whatever the percentage was, maybe that had to do with the lack of that Giannis gravitational pull, where now you have less space and less time to shoot because nobody's helping that far off. Or the double just necessarily isn't that ironclad. We got to send 2. We got to help early on the wall. We can kind of lag off and kind of help off my defender because I know Giannis is coming down this lane. That wasn't happening in that game, and the Bucks were still finding ways to create open or to create good 3-point looks.
Yeah, and to that point, without Giannis being on the floor, 41 threes, you only knocked down 13, just under 32%. But you know this intentionality of shooting more threes. It's a new mindset. You know, it's a different mindset. So you're letting them go early. You're trying to get them down early in the shot clock. So once I think this style of play, you kind of ease more into this style of play, those shots will fall at a higher frequency than what they fell that first night. So I have no problem. The main thing is get them up. You know, to me, it's get up a high volume of 3-point shots, and to me, this team, in terms of the quality of shooters that they have in the lineup,
they're starting
knocking them down.
Absolutely.
And then with AJ Green, you know, and I made a point about being targeted only because, and I said this, I joined Dave Kane for the radio broadcast just for the second quarter. You know, me and Dave, we're cool, so I wanted to kind of hang out with him for a minute. But so with AJ. He defensively, and Doc talked about this his first time seeing AJ. I think AJ was a rookie when Doc first came on board, but he talked about how AJ will battle you, and you just got to find a way to help him. So AJ did a good job. I think Miles Turner got a block in one of those situations. I forget against who. But AJ will stand you up. You know, we talk about that. They talk about it in football. He'll stand you up. He's going to fight you, going to battle you. He's going to stand you up. Now the question is what kind of help he's going to get behind him in terms of contesting shots, blocking shots, or whatever you're going to be able to do, but he's going to stand you up.
And I don't think it's a problem when you got Giannis and Miles Turner out there. So I don't think starting AJ and AJ's that's what I mean. But he's not going to be that big of a defensive liability. This pick on him thing won't be killing the Bucks in the regular season because of the presence of guys and length and dudes coming over. So it's not going to be the same dynamic.
And if you get AJ picked on by Wiggins, for example, and you've got Tyler Hero healthy, and you've got Norman Powell healthy, but you're going at AJ with Wiggins constantly. You know what that does to the rhythm of your offense, at least from the start. It kind of throws you off a bit. So it's not a bad thing to have that kind of a defender being put under the microscope, going at him the first 3 or 4 possessions, trying to take advantage. It kind of throws you off in terms of what you've been used to doing offensively. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But the other guy, Chris, and this comes from this uber competitive training camp that the Bucks have been talking about. I mean, 20 guys on the roster.
I still
don't know how the final 15 or so.
If he keep playing like this, who are you talking about?
Well, no, I'm just saying. Well, I'm talking about Andre Jackson Jr. Pete Nance was one of the stars of the game. 15.
Let's say Pete Nance can continue to play like this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be some tough decisions that's going to be have to make. Whatever the phrase is. You're going to have to make some tough decisions. Okay, talk about Andre Jackson, then I'll kind of just touch on Pete a little bit.
If you believe what you read from the different periodicals and all these pundits out there, then it looks like Andre Jackson Jr. with the limited guarantee, all the stuff with his contract. But you just don't have another player that brings you that energy, that vibe, that defensive mindset.
Man,
that I don't know. I mean.
That's tough.
That's usable on an NBA roster. And I talked about playing against the Cade Cunninghams, the bigger guards. To me, Andre Jackson Jr. can almost earn his keep with this matchup coming up.
Yeah.
And next time we come on the air, we'll be able to really delve into it. But that's where his value is in a playoff situation. A seven game series. You know, where you got to have a stout defensive effort against a Cade Cunningham type of a guard.
That's tough.
God, you know,
that's a great point because he's so versatile too defensively, and so that's what makes Dre so dangerous. Obviously, the question is the offense, but like what you mentioned, like a specialist kind of guy that on a matchup-to-matchup basis, it's like having a shutdown corner that comes in specifically to play against this wide receiver. Yeah. But, you know, we know he's going to do a great job, and that's a game changer. If Dre Jackson slows down Cade, slows down Darius Garland or whoever it is in the East, right? Jalen Brunson. You put him on Jalen, holds Jalen to 6 for 6.
Donovan Mitchell, whoever
you put him on, right? There's a possibility that dude might lock them up and it might change your fortune. So it's like you have to weigh that value. The value of Ajax, right?
Right.
It's like you got to make – it's a tough decision, bro.
And I tell you, I've been watching him in game, the one game, and in practice a lot.
What do you like? What are you doing out there?
Well, I'm convinced more than ever that there's a place for him in this league. Now, whether he's going to be here in Milwaukee or not, I don't know what's going to happen. How this is going to shake out. But this young man and Danny Hurley talked about him at UConn as being, you know, his all-time best and favorite player and averaging 6 points a game. So he's already proven, you know, on that level at least, that scoring is not what he's all about. He's the intangible guy. And when you're trying to create culture – like the Bucks are trying to create with this new youth movement. I mean, God, I mean, he kind of his motor, his vibe kind of fits right into that kind of culture that you want to create. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Doc Rivers, John Horst and crew, they're going to have some tough decisions to make. But I love the competition. And you talked about your guy, Pete Nance. I mean, to me, he was the unsung hero, kind of star of that game. Quietly, efficiently, effectively, I mean, putting together just a great all-around game. I really like his maybe it's DNA, his dad, you know, his brother, both NBA guys.
I don't know how to play the game, but it's like a systematic – like he's like – he fits. Like he knows how to play the game, the NBA game, knows where to go. He just does some of the nuanced little things like that I was like, wow, that guy could have a value. I think that – but finally to your point about the competition, right, the training camp competition, I mean – iron sharpens iron. So, like, if you got a group of 13 guys, 13 of 20 guys are under the age of 26, right? Yeah. So now in practice, I'm sure you've been to practice. I'm sure these dudes, the energy is palpable. The energy, it stands out. And as an older dude, you feed off of that. Right. You look at it. It's like what Doc told us right here, push-pull, right?
Yeah.
When I asked him the question about, you know, playing more young guys and this and that, but now it's about the younger guys pushing the older guys and the older guys pulling the younger guys. And they've created that perfect storm in this season's training camp. And I'll put whatever amount of money on it that the Bucks will not start 2-8 this season because of this infusion of these youth, young legs and this kind of training camp atmosphere versus last year where it was competitive. I got to see a day of training camp last year when it came out to UC Irvine. It was competitive, but by all accounts, what I'm hearing about this camp, it's an obvious difference.
Well, that's how you break up the staleness of the start of the season. You know, when you got a bunch of vets that have been around 10, 12 years, and this thing is, you know, it's drudgery, it's like old hat, and so just getting them mentally up for the start is difficult to do in a situation like this. Iron sharpens iron, steel sharpens steel. And it's been played out before my very eyes, watching practice, just how competitive this thing has been. I mean, I'm with you. I don't think, especially looking at the schedule, I think a 6-4 start, 7-3 start is not out of the question. And I really believe this team is gonna hit the ground running. So that'll be fun to look at. Chris Livingston against the Heat, man, that pull up jumper looked nice. The finishes looked nice. Man. You know, I'd almost kind of. Not written him off, but at 21 and still developing, you just don't know exactly what his trajectory is going to be like. But he is really developing at a really nice pace. Now, whether that means he'll be able to crack a rotation this year, probably not. But I'm really, really pleased and impressed with how he continues to develop his offensive game. I know his defense and his motor, his offensive rebounding was there. Yeah. But offensive skill package, man, is really looking like a solid NBA player.
I think that the Bucks will have more patience and more development runway for these type of guys. Chris Livingston's, these second rounders, these two ways.
Tyler Smith guys. Yeah.
Like, these are the guys that you need to hit on from a development standpoint with this new second apron situation and how the league rosters are now being constructed, right?
Yeah.
These are the type of guys that could, in a year, 2 years, 3 years, be playing meaningful minutes, a la Cason Wallace or Isaiah Joe for Oklahoma City or whoever. You know, those guys that got, you know, that stayed in the system, developed, were on two ways, kind of went up and down, but eventually cracked the rotation, put in the time, did the reps, and now they got the confidence and the comfort to contribute at the big stage. So for me, you love seeing, like, all the pieces of the roster, just how they're moving, how they're working, how they're developing, and those guys down there on the development tip are looking pretty solid.
Yeah, and even my guy, a guy like a Cormac Ryan, great shooter. I mean, tough nose, defensive player. You know, he's a guy. Don't sleep on him. I mean, he's a guy. You know, again, this year you're not gonna probably hear a whole lot about him.
But in terms of being in your program,
go ahead.
But Dad, not to cut you off, but like these Cormac Ryans and these kind of guys, I feel like that the NBA at this time, the way the NBA is constructed, like, this is the time a guy like that could get off the most, like, more than probably any other time, just because of how the systems work, the shots that he will get, and the ability to shoot. I mean, you look at Cleveland, you look at them guys.
Sam Merrill.
Dude, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about, bro.
We had him here in Milwaukee.
That's what I'm talking about.
As a rookie.
But you're talking about them type of dudes, right? Yeah, they'll give you a dub. Like, you look up, Sam Merrill has 17. I'm like, God dang, so how do you get 17? And he gets it easy. Yeah. So it's a structure. It's a system thing, right? This is what Doc and John are working on. They're working on building a system so you can plug and play guys with a specific skill set so that you can flourish in the system. Yeah. If you're not shooting the shots, if you're not getting guys like Pete Nance 7 threes, he won't be able to show what he can do in 2 or 3 threes. You need 7. I'm not going to say inflated stats like the old run and shoot at Houston. Somebody mentioned David Klinger. I don't know if you remember that name, but he was the Cincinnati Bengals quarterback.
Yeah, sure,
but he threw 5,000 yards in the run and shoot system. And I'm not saying the Bucks are that, but it's the concept of, hey, guys that don't necessarily have that, you know, NBA pedigree or that background or that resume, you're going to be able to plug and play them, and they're going to be meaningful. They're going to make meaningful contributions to your roster.
Well, and this guy doesn't fit into that category, but you know, we would be remiss if we didn't at least mention his name. But Cole Anthony, man.
Come on now.
I mean, man. His energy.
I'm sold.
He had a chase down block in practice, man, where he just didn't quit on a play. You know, it didn't have the offensive kind of effectiveness in game one, but I watch him work on his skill package. This dude is good, man. Cole is good.
And Dad, you've liked him since he had the Timberlands. I think the dunk contest.
Don't choke the butters.
But for me, with Cole Anthony, hey, he's got that thing. That us light skin, us guys that are lighter, it's a light skin chip.
The George Farmar, Toby Bailey, light skin JT Murray,
Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. We all got a. It's
explain
a
what
chip.
That is. Explain what that is to the people that had no idea what we're talking about.
Well, so growing up as a light-skinned guy, mixed, whatever you want to call me, you know, not necessarily biracial, but light-skinned, right? Because I'm black and all that, right? You get kind of the stigma that you're a pretty boy, that you're soft. You know, you got the curly hair. And you
so
got
when you
hair.
Walk in a gym, what happens? In the hood down in Compton, you walk in a gym, what kind of disrespect is thrown your way?
Oh, yeah, I got this light-skinned mofo right here. Or, you know, I got this dude with the curly hair.
This curly haired pretty boy.
I got this curly haired pretty boy. I got Shamar Moore over here. Or, you know, they'll compare you to some actor pretty
Come on,
boy.
Jamar. Yeah, come on, Jamar. Jamar ain't got no game. Come on, Jamar.
Oh. Hey, but Cole Anthony has the chip, bruh. And you see it in his attitude. You see it in his demeanor when he's picking up and the pressure and the stuff that he's going to be able to do. It's like he has fun. So what I'm seeing from guys seem to be embracing these roles already in the first game. Like, it's like, I have a defined role. And so now I'm going to really try to, like Doc and John said, be a star in my role. And dudes are really trying to live that out. We're seeing kind of the first little inklings of it. I can't wait to see how these next preseason games go. But I truly think that this team identity has more direction than it did at the start of last season.
Well, and people that are listening to us talk about the light skin chip and kind of poo pooing and say, "Oh man, that has no bearing."
Oh, it's a real thing.
With players like with me.
Yeah.
It was like being a garbage man and not being able to shoot from the outside like a Richard Washington and Dave Myers, my forwards at UCLA. So I had this chip trying to prove that I could knock down a jumper on a consistent basis. So I put in the work, did everything I needed to do to improve that shot. So by the time I got into the league, you could pencil me in for 20 points a game. But it's remarkable what players use as motivation. And a lot of times it's those slights that get you angry, that get you pissed off inside. I remember you were playing at the YMCA in Inglewood. There was a player named Bill. Me and Coach Waters, Ed Waters, my best friend, Coach's Crenshaw now, compared you to Bill and said how Bill, I think Bill may have gotten the best of you the first time you guys met, played him in a championship game. We got you so, we got you so hyped, we had to almost give you a sedative, man. You were just on a whole nother level in terms of fire. So it's amazing just the things that can get you fired up as a basketball player.
And you mentioned it last week when we were talking to Eric Name in context of the conversation with Giannis, just about kind of like how athletes sometimes we make up and create things in our minds, right?
The windmill's the battle. We got windmills. We got to fight.
We create these things. People are saying,
Coyote.
He hates me. They did this to me because of this. They don't think I'm good enough. You know, and so, but bringing it back to Cole Anthony and why I mentioned the light skin thing, what you're talking about, MJ. That's something to prove. And so you can take that with you at every step in your career. Oh, you think I'm soft on defense? Okay, I'm going to rip you. I'm going to lock you up. Oh, you think I don't got a bag? Okay, let me show you the bag. Oh, you think I can't? I'm light-skinned. I got good hair. I can't do this. Well, let me show you what I can do. Why are you laughing, man?
Well, you said you could take that every phase of your career, even post-career. Quick story.
Absolutely.
We're on the road, and Pete Nance comes up to me and says, "My dad said that you're a really good player. I mean, you were like a smaller forward. You were like a small forward. My dad, Larry Nance at 6'10", says that you were actually pretty good for a small forward.
Larry taking shots, bro.
For a small, small forward. You know where my mind went? Wait a minute. I averaged 10 rebounds a game my rookie year. I averaged 20-7 as a small. So it's just, we still carry that baggage that we had way back in the day, because that's, George McGinnis, the first time I played against him, Chris, and I had like a 25 and 14 rebounds. They asked him, what did you think of Marcus Johnson? Oh, he's pretty good for a 6'4 guy.
Let me tell you, that's what I'm about to say. Those guys in the NBA, they kind of like pencil you into that. Like when I talk to those guys or been around them, there was always this air like you were undersized doing what you were doing. Undersized. And that undersized nature was passed down to me, and it helped me become the player I was. But it's those type of chips. It's those type of chips that really could dictate
I'm still carrying that chip on my shoulder. Carry that big chip, man. But
oh, that's funny.
So let's talk. We can't leave this episode without talking about the big fella, the big dog. Got to feed the big dog. Big Giannis.
Yes, sir.
Press conference recently talked about, you know, he had this wedding ring analogy. He's like, when I walk around without my wedding ring. And
you go to an amusement park.
It's temptation. It's temptation.
People try to talk to you without my wedding
talk
ring.
To you. No wedding ring. They think you're available.
I'm like, and Giannis.
So, that was the analogy. That was the analogy that he used in terms of just teams inquiring about whether or not the Bucks would be interested. Sure. Now, if I'm John Horst, you know, I if it's the Knicks or whomever, I'm asking for Carl Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson. I want your whole lineup. I'm going to gut your team so bad that I'm not going to make it worth your while.
Sure.
But that's – when you got a guy like Giannis, that's not surprising to me that these conversations are being had. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, I think we as Bucks fans are going to have to prepare for some harsh realities if we don't win a championship this year. And I'm not trying to be that guy, but when you read and listen to what Giannis is saying, and then you couple that with all the multitude of reports that have been coming out all summer, right, that are not just baseless. These things aren't baseless, right? So whether it's, you know, and Doc came out and said it, John Horst has never called a team about Giannis. That doesn't mean a team hasn't called every single day.
Right.
John Horst about Giannis and him having to tell folks no and this and that. So anyway, all that to be said, I feel like Giannis did the right thing in his media availability by saying he's committed to the Bucks. He's focused on the season, the here and now. And that's what everybody should be focused on. There's not going to be no midseason deals. There's nothing going down like that. Yeah. I feel like Giannis is going to play out this season. He's locked into the Bucks for this season. And then, like he said, in 6 or 7 months, if he decides to change his mind, and that's human nature. And so I feel like that, the evaluation, so the Bucks organization, the entire city of Milwaukee is on notice. Giannis, what happens this season is really going to directly affect his either staying in Milwaukee or bouncing or trying to force his way out of Milwaukee.
So just play Karnak the Magnificent in terms of predicting the future.
Is that Johnny Carson?
The whole Johnny Carson, him and Ed McMahon, he get the envelopes kept in a mayonnaise jar under the fucking Wagnalls porch for three, whatever. But what will it take to appease Giannis? Will a run to the conference semis be enough? Does it have to be the conference finals? Does it have to be all or nothing? You need to get to the NBA Finals, have a chance to, you know, what will it take this season in your mind for Giannis to be okay with what he's got to work with for the next foreseeable future?
I think for a guy that's built like Giannis, because this is a guy that is not adverse to playing or leading a team of less talented individuals to the promised land. He did it with Greece in Eurobasket, so he's not like tripping on not having another star. Now, how far he goes, the ceiling of this squad, this particular squad, what the final outlook of the roster is going to be, the ceiling of this squad and how they do this season is going to determine. So the ceiling that you're asking about, conference semis, I think conference finals. If he says, hey, if I can get to a conference finals this year with a young core, young group, we're not too old, we can run it back again next year and then the year after without having too many guys being over 34 years old, I think the window that we're looking at is about the next two or three seasons. Good thing I think John Horst did by filling the roster with young dudes. I think the young nature of this roster is invigorated Giannis, giving him new life, because he talked about it in his media availability, how now he gets to lead by example. He gets to come in. He doesn't have to talk too much. He's the elder statesman. Everybody knows what time it is. They got to follow his lead. So now I feel like if he could galvanize this group, lead them to a highly successful postseason, I think these, you know, Giannis would be happy with his roster. Now, first round exit, no playoffs, you know, we're going to be right. Because think about what Giannis has had to go through and what contributes to this. This is a winner. This is a guy that wants to win. You win a championship and you get three straight first round exits. You made the conference semis and then three straight first round exits, something like that. So he's getting tired of losing in the first round. This is why every year, the last several years, you hear this stuff, whether it's, you know, his agent leaking, whoever it is doing it, it's something coming out about not being happy with the roster. The Bucks have made the necessary moves. They cut and stretch Dame. They got Miles Turner. They filled the roster with a bunch of young legs, youth movement. So now we get to see how this thing plays out. And I think how it plays out will determine Giannis's future in Milwaukee past.
Well, and so he talks about legacy. And before we get into that, I just want to say that the guy that so succinctly kind of really explained this whole Giannis dynamic was our producer, Dylan Hunter Carter, when he said Giannis is so good at calming fans' nerves at the same time he sends them into an existential crisis.
That was hilarious.
The polarity of Giannis. You're calming nerves, but it's like, well, he didn't really say he's going to be here for the rest of the career.
He still left
a little loophole there, but
six,
hey.
7 months? What?
Yeah.
That was a bombshell. Did you hear that part, Dan? When he said that, my heart dropped. When he said it today, yeah. Towards the, he's
six,
like,
7 months.
He said, if I change my mind in six or seven months.
I'm allowed to.
I was like, what?
There's that existential crisis that Dylan was talking about right there. In 6 or 7 months, good. I may feel differently. All bets are off in 6 or 7 months. So, but in terms of his legacy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, and when he first said that, I'm like, you know, I'm from the old school, John Wooden, you know, legacy. Do you really need to think about it? But that's important. And I say that, Chris, as someone who went from the Milwaukee Bucks, one of the all-time first-class franchises, to the L.A. Clippers. Mm. In terms of tarnishing if you want to tarnish a legacy, you know, go from the Bucks to the Clippers back in the mid-'80s when Donald Sterling was running the show and you're staying at the Econo Lodge for training camp and you're out at Cal Poly Pomona while the Lakers are at Hawaii or Santa Barbara someplace and flying around in private jets and staying at the Ritz-Carlton in Four Seasons. I digress. But that's, you know, when I thought about it in that context, you know, that's important. You know, you want to go out on top or at least have an opportunity to compete for it. That's what that's about, you know. And I think about those days, you know, when the Clippers were – I was with the Clippers, Chris. It was the dog days, and a Paul Silas was following us around. And I asked Junior Bridgman, you know, why is Paul Silas following us around? He was working for the New Jersey Nets. And Paul had told him that they were thinking about trading for me to bring me back to New Jersey. And my thought was like, But you know, I'm in LA, I'm home, all that craziness. But in terms of being in a situation, man, where you can have a chance to win something, you know what I mean? You know, that's something that you've got to look at with a player like Giannis. Because as you mentioned, you continue with these first round exits and all that. That tarnishes a legacy, right?
I mean,
so you want to finish on an uptick, as Al McGuire used to say when he was at Marquette.
Well, you think about it. I mean, you know, Giannis's prime is shrinking. Every year, the window gets smaller. You did the move. So think about what he's gone through. They move Chris. They bring in Dame. You know, they got – so Drew left, traded Drew, Chris, Dame. You know, so it's like you're losing in the first round. So this has been, you know, sort of his life with the Bucks the last few years. And a lot of times, you know, that could start to wear on you. And I won't say it like, oh, I want to leave. But when you're a guy that's built like Giannis, wired like Giannis, thinking about legacy, thinking about his impact and standing in the game of basketball, you don't want these continue. It's like Russell Wilson out in doggone New York, you know, shutting it down, not looking good as a quarterback, being like, yo, you know, this might. And then dudes going on TV saying he might not be a Hall of Famer now because, you know, he looks so bad. But not saying this is what's happening with Giannis, but who's to say if that's not something that might be on his mind? I think here's the bottom line with Giannis. I think Giannis is loyal. He's fully committed to the Bucks until he feels like the Bucks aren't fully committed to him, to building a championship contender around him.
Yeah, no, I got you. And if I had to do all over again, you know, I would have stayed in Milwaukee for the duration of my career and competed for championships, even though we had to go through Doc and go through Larry Bird and all those great Celtic and Sixer teams back in the day. But it does something to you as a competitor, you know, to finish your career with the bottom feeder, with a team that nobody respects, and it just does something to you psychologically as not only a basketball player but as a person. So I understand where Giannis is coming from. You know, you and especially since you've already tasted, you've been to the promised land, the milk and honey.
Absolutely. Last thing, and it's unique to guys like you guys who are transcendent type talents that are at the top of their field, right? Yeah. It's different for normal guys maybe to go to the Clippers after the Bucks, but when you're a superstar, NBA superstar, you know, you got Giannis on that plane of individual, right? Yeah. I can't imagine what it was like going to the Clippers after spending all that, how it must have drained you personally and professionally.
Yeah, and the naivety of just like, well, I can go to the Clippers. I got Norm Nixon. We got James Donaldson. We got these really, really good serviceable ball players. Derek Smith. But, you know, I can turn this thing around. We can compete with the Lakers. And, boy, it didn't.
Well, y'all started 5-0 in 86. Don't get it twisted.
Yeah.
Y'all was hooping. Don't act like y'all wasn't hooping. I was there. Yeah. I remember. I was like, damn. I saw it. I was like, y'all was hoping.
That was the extent of my excitement.
Y'all was hoping. 5-0.
I think we lost the next five, though. But that's neither here nor there. But listen, man, finally, there was some conversation about Giannis and a Greek reporter kind of putting some of his personal business out there on blast. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but there's certain lines that shouldn't be crossed, and I understand it's the nature of the clicks and the eyeballs and the more salacious and sensationalist kind of stuff that you could come up with. I have a problem with that, though, because I just believe that there are certain things that should be protected, and family and kids and especially a guy in Giannis's position in terms of just being a world recognized athlete that you should respect. So I had an issue with that, but I don't know your thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, I had an issue. I mean, if you're publishing, you know, super sensitive, confidential, private sort of information, that's crossing the line. I feel like, you know, it's one thing to go at Giannis. It's one thing to talk about Giannis. Right. One thing to cover Giannis. But when you start to go into his kids or his wife, and then that's where you cross the line. And he had to draw a line. He had to set a boundary. He had to speak out, take a stand for his family. Now, will this, you know, what does this do? I don't know. For me, this is a highly personal, sensitive situation. So for me, my standpoint, Giannis had to do what he had to do, and that's the end of the situation. Giannis, as a father, did his most important job, which is protect his family.
It's his business and his business only, and everybody else needs to stay out of it. So, yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. But listen, man, great stuff, man. So next segment, we've got one of the all-time top workout Svengalis.
Clint.
Around Clint Parks. He's worked out Jaden and Jalen McDaniels. He's worked out Kawhi Leonard when I first met him, and now Kyle Kuzma is his guy. And so we're going to talk to Clint about Kyle and kind of what this season is looking like for Kyle Kuzma in terms of the work that he put in. So Clint Parks coming up in the next segment. We'll be right back after this on Here District. All right, welcome back to Here District. Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson. And Chris, talk about Fantastic Voyage. This guy comes from places in Hawaii I can't even pronounce. I can't even pronounce, and I'm pretty good at pronunciation. I've been all over the place, but this man, Clint Parks, head of the and founder of the Clint Parks Skills Academy, one of the, and I say this without hyperbole, you know, because I've seen him work out up close and personally, worked out my son Cyrus and has made some great recommendations for my daughter Shiloh. But Clint Parks is one of the best at what he does. We've been fortunate to have some of those top skills trainers in the world on this show, and he's definitely one of them. Clint Parks, welcome to Here District, man. Welcome.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me on today, guys. It's always good to see you guys, talk basketball with you guys. It's been a while, but yeah, thanks for having me on. I was really excited when KJ reached out to me and asked me, so it's good to be on today.
So listen, man, so there's an old saying that those who can do, those who can't teach. Mm. I'm an acting teacher. I'm an acting coach myself now. So my question to you, how good were you? I'm reading all this hype about how you know, NBA career, college greatness. How good were you as a basketball player?
I was a good high school player. I was, you know, I came up in a time, like, I grew up in Riverside most of my life till moving to Hawaii, and I was one of those kids. I think my playing career, like, and obviously being a smaller guard, like, what I needed as a player, like, that push, that drive that you guys see me give a lot of kids today, like,
yeah.
That's kind of what's driven me to do what I'm doing today, because I didn't really have that. So, like, I feel like I went to junior college, I got hurt, and I stopped after that. But I always had my mind on, like, getting into doing what I'm doing now. But a lot of it comes from, like I just said, like, my whole, like, who I am as a trainer, as a coach today comes from my upbringing in basketball, like as a kid in high school, all of that. And that's kind of what's pushed me to be like, to have the success that you've seen my guys have and our programs had.
Well, and I love telling this story because it kind of validates, Chris, my value as a skill evaluator. So the first time I met Clint was after a pump event, yeah. Dana and David pump event. I think Cal State Dominguez
Hills.
I'd watched these kids play, high school kids play, and I was just fascinated, Chris, with this one dude that I thought, you know, that UCLA should have been on. So I walked up to him and Clint. They were walking away, and I was like, "Man, what's your name?" He's like, "Kawhi." I was like, "Is UCLA recruiting you?" He's like, "No," and I couldn't believe it. But Clint, I mean, hands the size of hubcaps, but he just had something about him. Now, he was not obviously nowhere near as polished as he turned out to be, but talk about your relationship with Kawhi Leonard, also Tony Snell, his high school teammate. I mean, were those the two kind of initial guys that you started to work with and really get your feet wet in terms of what you were doing?
Yeah, I mean, Kawhi was like the very beginning when we first started our program in 2006. He went to Riverside King, which is where I went to high school at a time. And he was like the very first one that I really like dove in, like high, like, and it was like, okay, like, let's see how far we could take this thing. Obviously, like you said, his wingspan was out of this world. He had those Michael Jordan mitts, you know, and everything. Yeah. He had the motor, you know, like, and the skill was never, I always get mad. And I could tell you guys this. I always say, like, everyone wants to remix his basketball journey. Like, when he came into the league, he was no good. Right. And then he became, I'm like, let's just stop that. You don't get drafted 15th in the National Basketball Association draft by not having a certain level of game. Now, did he continue to develop and take his game to new heights? Yes, he has. But he always had the motor. He always had he always had a love for the game. He loved being in the gym. He loved getting better. And, you know, you could see it coming, even in high school and then at San Diego State. Like, you could see flashes of the skill, him getting it off the backboard and pushing it, him playing at the elbow in ISO situations. Now, was it like the smoothest thing ever? No, it was a little rigid. It still is. It still can be rigid at times. Like, you're not mistaking him for MJ out there, like, how smooth and fluid he is.
That's not true. He's pretty smooth. He's grown into being one of the smoothest, sweetest dudes in the history of basketball.
He's like a rock and soccer robot, though. I mean, but you know, he's got this thing about him where he's so, you know, it's almost
what's
like
a rock and soccer robot?
The big hands, what I'm thinking about. The big hands. But in terms of robot, I mean, it's almost like a computer. You know what I mean? Like, he's not human. You just kind of plug in everything you want him to do, and he just goes out. Cyborg, that's the word I'm looking for. And he goes out there and gives you but in the context of modern basketball, pull-ups, shooting off the dribble, separation moves, between, step back, all that good stuff. But it's like, he's like, you almost like computer programmed this guy to do it. And that's what I saw in him early, was just he had this dominance, this mindset. He was so business-like. You know, no frills, no joking around, just all serious business on the basketball floor.
That's who he's always been. You could just tell, like, his game is like, he's developed his skill through the old 10,000 hours. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you could tell everything is high repetition. You guys have played with some of the best players at Crenshaw, both of you guys. Like, you guys know, you guys have played with dudes who never showed up to the gym, never stayed late, never came early, and they just could come out there and just give you 30, and it was just like, then leave and not show up for practice for a week, and then they come back the next week, and they had it like that. Like, he's one of those guys where it's like, it's day after day, it's routine, and it's repetition, and that's what you see in his pull-up game. That's what you see in his post game, you know, and that's all stuff that I feel like that I had played a role in the beginning of establishing, because you guys know me, like, I'm big on the small, I'm big on the small details, the fundamentals of the game. Like, I feel like, I always tell Chris this, I watched Chris at UCLA growing up as a kid. I still remember that game at Cal against Cal where he had like 30 something in a halftime almost. And it was, you know, he's playing against great athletes, but you're getting to your spot. I'm bumping you. I'm getting to my fades. I'm getting to my mid range. I'm knocking down my catch and shoot. It's all basic stuff. That's what the game comes down to. Even at the level you guys are covering at now, like, if you can't do the basic stuff at a high level, like, there's not even, that's got to be the main part of your bag, and that's what Kawhi has mastered.
Yeah, before you jump in here, Chris, actually, Chris had 36, one below the 37 I had as a senior.
Well, 25 at half.
But go ahead, Chris. Go ahead.
Clint, but staying on that, right, you talked about just the repetition, the details. I always said Michael Jordan, despite his tremendous athleticism, he was also a master of the fundamentals of the game, down to the footwork. I had a question specifically about your approach when you train guys like Kawhi, like Tony Snell, like a Kyle Kuzma, and the myriad of other guys that you have worked with. What are your core principles? What is CPSA's sort of core four or five principles, philosophies that you try to instill in each of the guys that you work with?
I mean, as far as shooting, it all like everything that we start with is like mic and drill, form shooting, jump stops, step throughs, like all that stuff, because I firmly believe when your footwork is elite, the rest of the game becomes so much easier. Like if you got bad feet stepping into a jump shot, just stepping into your shot, or you got bad feet trying to coming off a pin down, like if you're chopping your feet and you're just all like rough, like there's not going to be no fluidity in that area. And so like I always think, like, let's start every day we start and start a workout with, no matter who I'm working with, it could be one of the best players in the NBA, it could be a young kid. It's let's be able to start at the very like we're teaching the game. Like Coach Popovich was big on that. Like we're starting every day with God and practice, like daily vitamins. Like you don't know nothing about basketball. Like we're working on our jump stops. We're working on our rip throughs. We're working on form shooting every time, getting everything straight up and down, you know, landing in the same spot, like all of that stuff. And I think it's just like all basics. Like there's really no, like I'm big, like there's not, like I don't have a secret sauce. I think the secret sauce is showing up 5-6 days a week, sometimes multiple times a day, and then pounding the same stuff over and over and over again.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. I mean, you got to have the love for it. And this is not a knock on my fifth son, wound up getting a D1 scholarship. But I can remember, Clint, you made yourself available at Pepperdine University on an Easter Sunday. And when I mentioned it to Cyrus, Chris, he was like, work out on Easter?
Oh. That's all right. It's all right.
We love Cy. Hey, but as a parent, you got to know. You know, it gives you an indication. And that's important, right, Clint? Like, just in terms of they've got to love it more than you love it. They've got to want it more than you want it for them. And that's what separated Chris, even though not nowhere near as athletic as a lot of players, but just separated him to becoming the 24th all-time leading scorer in UCLA history by the time he was done. I mean, you've got to recognize that in the individuals you work out with.
No, you do. You totally do. And it goes back to, like, that's why me and Chris have always had a really good relationship, because we're both obsessed with this game. Yeah. We're both obsessed with getting better, helping guys get better. And when a kid comes to us and is like, I want to get better, then we're like, okay, do you really know what that means to us? Like, because our definition of you really want to get better, okay, I'll see you at the gym at 6 a.m. for school. If school starts at 8, we're in the gym at 6:15, and we're going to 7:30, 7:40. You got time to shower before class, and then maybe coming back at night some days. But I'm sending you different stuff. I'm watching film. Like, how can we get better? Like, do you really want it at that level? Yeah, and then some kids will be like, no, I don't want it at that level. And then some kids will be like, yeah, I do want it at that level. Because that's like when you talk about getting to the NBA, like, that's what you got to be obsessed with this game. Even if you have great physical tools, even if you have amazing athleticism, all that, like you got to love the daily process of this deal.
Well, and Chris, but that's one thing about Giannis that I love, because I think Kobe allowed him to work out with him, and he told Giannis to be at the gym by 6 or whatever. And Giannis, you know, got there at 5. And by the time Kobe got there, Giannis was stretched out, ready to go. The one thing that just irks me to no end. If you say we're working out at 6, in comes the kid at 6:03 with his flip-flops on, his, you know, no socks on, got the bag, got to sit down and kind of get himself together. You know, man, if I say 6, come in ready to work at 6. And to me, that's an indication of just where a kid's mindset is. But, yeah, go ahead. I digress.
And also, Clint, has there ever been like a time, like maybe with one of these guys that I mentioned, where – sure, it's always going to be about how much the kid wants it and the player wants it. But let's say you see something in a guy and you see more in him than he may see in himself. How do you get that type of player to buy in? He might necessarily have the fire and the want. And that's part of being a trainer, too, is making players see something in themselves they might not necessarily see and then go after? How does that process work for you?
I mean, it's simple. You know this, KJ. Like, people always say, well, you might hear like, oh, older, I'm becoming an old head myself, so I got to be careful saying this. But old heads, they'll be like, well, you got to learn. Oh, you just got to let them learn the hard way. I had to learn the hard way, and I always say no. Like, I don't want you to learn the hard way. I don't want you to throw away your talent or you miss out on a great opportunity just because I was trying to teach you a lesson. No, because you learning the hard way can mean you not reaching your potential.
Man.
So, like, I always tell my boys, like, there's going to be times where, like, you don't want nothing to do with me. You don't like what I'm saying. Like, there's just going to be times that's going to come. It's going to happen because I'm pushing you, like, because it's either going to be, when I get mad at them, I always tell them this, like, okay, if you don't want me to push you, you want to go through the motions, well, just come join me because that's what you're going to be doing. You're going to be training kids one day, and then you're going to be a part of basketball. You're going to be a coach. You're not going to be playing.
Facts.
You're not going to be getting paid to play basketball at a high level if you don't embrace what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, so because now, it's hard where you guys are at. You guys are covering the Bucks. You're on the road, MJ, all the time. Like, it's hard to be one of those 450 guys. It's hard.
Facts.
These kids and these parents, they can't even comprehend how hard it is.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Well, yeah. And see, this is where I used to get into it with Stephen A. Smith when he was over at Fox Sports. He would always, Chris, he'd be highly hypercritical of Jack Haley and talk about Jack Haley is not a ball player. Jack
Whatever.
Haley. Whatever. And I'm like, dude, Jack Haley has been in the league for 20 years. Jack Haley. Or Ryan Hollins. People knock Ryan Hollins. Ryan Hollins started 60 NBA games during the course of his career. And so I'm always one to give the utmost respect to anybody that can make it into that league and be a part of a team, make the cut even. For me, I mean, that's a major accomplishment, man. I have the utmost respect for that. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
It's lost on so many people.
Yeah, yeah. But instead of now, this leads us into Kyle Kuzma, one of your guys that you've been working out since he first got out of Utah, I believe. When did you start with Kyle?
I started with Kuz his redshirt freshman year at Utah.
Wow. Oh, okay. So before
early.
The NBA.
Yeah.
Early.
How did that collaboration come about?
So you want to know what's funny? People always used to give me a hard time, like, because I'm big on social media, on Twitter and stuff, like, well, X, whatever you want to call it, like, you know, like, it's like, for me, it's free branding, it's free marketing, you know. So, like, I've always posted a bunch of stuff about Kawhi and Tony, and I'm the proud trainer, whatever you want to call me, I don't care. And so Kuz ended up reaching out to me. He sent me a direct message, and he was like, I followed the work that you've done with Kawhi and Tony. And I think I can be similar to those guys, and I would love to work with you, you know. Wow. And so I was like, yeah, like, I did some research on him. And I was like, of course. And the similarities, I'm like, he's taller than these guys, but like the skill level was there. Like there was a level of skill already there. There's some things that need to be refined, but I was like, yeah, like, no brainer, you know.
Where was he as a redshirt freshman? Was he
at Utah?
But no, I know. But was he penciled in to start? Was he the
no? Projected, this is projected this, to be his a great... No, this is his freshman year at Utah when he was sitting out.
Okay,
because Kuz was a redshirt because he was like, it wasn't called Prop 48 at that point, but he was like, he had to sit out, continue to work towards academically. He ended up graduating in 4 years, which is another thing people don't talk about enough.
Yeah,
super proud of him with that. Like, you know, you come in. We all know the stories of guys being Prop 48, but then being able to get yourself through college, he was able to do that 4 years before he left with his last year. But no, he was his, and even his freshman, his redshirt year where he first started playing, like he didn't play very much. That year they had went to the Sweet 16 with DeLon Wright and Jakob Poeltl, and lost to Duke. Like, he didn't play that much on that team. Like, he played sporadically. He had minutes here and there, but like, no, Kuz is like the definition of really. Like, out the mud, as they say.
Yeah, no, that's good stuff, man. I didn't realize you'd started with him that early, but my question is this: with Kyle, and explain to our listeners and viewers. So Kyle, over a 2-year stretch back in Washington with the Wizards, I was going to say the Bullets, but 2023 and 2024, he averaged 21 and 22 points a game. Then that next season, they asked him to kind of scale back. They were going with the youth movement. They were going to, you know, not feature him as much offensively. Then he comes to the Bucks, in terms of his mental, how do you think that affected him? What was the focus this offseason in terms of, I think with Kyle, it's just, a lot of it's just the mental aspect because he's put in the work with you for all these years. What was the focus this offseason?
I would say the biggest like the three things I talked about with him all summer was fundamentals, discipline, and accountability. Like, we got to be accountable for what happened last year.
Yeah.
No, that's part of being a professional, which I thought he did a great job. He owned that. Didn't make no excuses. Understanding, you know what, I got to be better. Like, I have, like, just flat out, like, no excuses. Like, I got to play better. Like, you know what the expectation is for you. You know you didn't meet that. You know, you came into the year last year, you had an injury, had a setback, which you guys know, like, whenever you have a setback like that at the beginning of the year, those are things that are hard to overcome. But, you know, you got traded and they traded away some good players and they brought you in. And, you know, for whatever reason, it just didn't click for that group. And, yeah, he owned it. And that's my biggest thing to him is just getting back, you know. Obviously, he works really hard. He takes very good care of his body. He's in really good shape right now. But just my thing to him is just like not settling for jumpers, like not just shoot, like really getting downhill, putting pressure on the rim. You know, playing out in transition, rebounding the ball like a madman, like being somebody who's double digit rebounds every game. Like that's how he got to the league. So I always go back to tell guys like. When you know you're going on year 9 for Kuz, so like there's like everybody's career is like you're reinventing yourself, you're in different situations, so you're gonna have those peaks and valleys. But my biggest thing to him, it was just like do the things that got you to the NBA.
Yeah,
do when those things.
When you're playing off Giannis, what's the challenge? What's the challenge for you? I mean, do you watch video of Giannis, film of Giannis? How he and Chris Middleton played off each other? What do you do to help Kuz make that adjustment?
I mean, a lot of the talks was like you played with stars before. That's the advantage.
Yeah,
like you played with arguably some people would say LeBron, best player of all time. Like you played, you played with him. You won a championship with him. You have championship pedigree. You know, like. You know, you played with AD. You played on a stacked team, like, and a lot of people don't understand. Like, I know because I've had players in those situations in the past, and I have players in the situation now, like Jaden McDaniels playing in Minnesota with Ant and Julius Randle and Cat before, and all those guys. Like, you know, it's not always easy playing with other great players like that are ball dominant, but you got to find a way to impact the game. Like, you got to You got to go get those. You got to go get those scrappy buckets. Yeah. You got to go create a rhythm for yourself. Right. You know, playing off you got to make timely cuts to the basket to get you easy ones. You got to get out in transition. You know, Kuz is not a player that's just like you're going to sit behind the 3-point line and just spot up all game.
Yeah.
And you're just going to make shots. No, his jumper starts flowing when he gets in a rhythm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think we saw some of the energy that you were talking about at the last preseason game. There was a moment, I think it was the third quarter, where he really got involved and active with getting it off the glass, pushing it, and then trying to find guys. I think that for me, point Kuz is what I'll call it. It's a revelation because he now presents a value to the Bucks on the floor when he's not scoring. And for me, that was always last season, that was Kuz's biggest issue when he's not knocking down shots. What good is he out there on the floor? I think if he focuses and hones in on that, and like you said, double-digit rebounds, 8 rebounds last night, he's hitting the glass, 1 for 6, wasn't the greatest shooting night, right? But first preseason game. So he gets to iron this stuff out. I'm a believer in Kuz because I feel like Doc may play him a lot at the four this season. He started at the four, obviously, because Giannis wasn't there, but I think that's a role for him that he can exploit. I feel like it's a mismatch for Kuz. I feel like the Bucks won't suffer tremendously defensively with him at the four. And I think that gives them another like wild card sort of, you know, when a big ball handles, it turns everything kind of on its head. Everybody's like wait a second.
Defense upside down.
The four man is pushing. Oh, so it messes up our rotations, messes everything up. And you saw that with him finding Ryan Rollins, weak side three in the corner. You know, he's pushing the floor. He's finding guys, MJ. I know you might have noticed that a little bit. That flow to me, that was solid. What did you think about that, those spurts, MJ, in particular?
Well, no, I like it, but I want to go back to something that that Clint said. It reminded me of a story. You know, Chris, I forgot, I got a million stories. But so Reggie Theus was being recruited by UCLA, right, Clint, Chris? And so Richard Washington, my teammate, was showing him around. So Richard never seen Reggie play, didn't know anything about Reggie. So Richard's like, so Reggie, I mean, is your game kind of similar to Marcus's? You know, Reggie's like, well, no, Marcus is a garbage man.
What?
My game is, my game is more, you know, handle and smooth and all that. But I wasn't offended because one man's trash is another man's treasure. Garbage got me 4 or 5 solid buckets every single game. And I tell my daughter, I tell all my kids this. If you can get you like 10 points, 8 points, 6
yes.
points off of offensive rebounds, you go from being a 15-point-per-game scorer to like a 20-point-per-game scorer. So the
Thank
scrappiness
you.
And this Milwaukee Bucks team, Clint, 30th in offensive rebounds. We need somebody to shake things up in terms of offensive rebounds, and you don't hurt yourself in transition because now the defense or the offensive team before that has to block you out, worry about keeping you off the boards. And that's the kind of things I think Kuz can really, really help himself, benefit himself and benefit this team, just doing that scrappy type of work.
Yes, yes. So many guys, like, you kind of lose your way when it's like, because, you know, everyone gets caught up in, oh, like, how do the buckets look? Man, if you go out there and your motor is running hot every game, and you're getting out there in the beginning of the game and you're sprinting the floor, you're waking guys up on the other team who are trying to ease their way into the game. Ain't no easing your way into the game against me. That's what I'm telling Kuz. There should be nobody. Like, you're sprinting that floor so hard every time, you're putting pressure on the defense. And then you're going to get yourself into a rhythm. You're going to put yourself into a better rhythm just by doing that. Going to get you a tip dunk, getting you that energy, getting you that big dunk in transition. You know what I mean? Like, or going to get a putback, whatever it is. Or even if it's not you creating a scoring opportunity for yourself, you're creating scoring opportunities for the team.
Just with activity, and the attention that you attract. Yes.
And then the threes are gravy. The threes are just like the cherry on top of the sundae. And then you start adding Kuz get hot on top of that, instead of relying on that and then kind of ignoring
those parts. And then it's like, oh, well, you're not making shots tonight. So it's like the old adage at any level where a coach hits you with the, well, what good are you on the court? You ain't making shots. You're not doing nothing else. You know, we get that at every level. So it's like, bring that energy every single game. Be a force defensively. Be somebody that can guard 1 through 4. No easy catches. Keep the ball in front of you.
Yeah. Well, and keep things in context, too. I mean, I just looked up this stat today. Kuz with the Bucks shot 54% in terms of effective field goal percentage. That's the highest of his career. And he didn't really have a, you know, we don't look at it as a great shooting season, but it wasn't like he was just totally useless out there. But here's my question for you, Clint and Chris. I want you to chime in, too. We talked about him playing with LeBron with the Lakers, that championship season with 20. Was that that was a bubble year?
So the bubble year,
2020. What's the difference, if there is one? But what is the difference between playing with a ball dominant player like LeBron, and playing with a guy like Giannis who has the ball in his hands an awful lot and will have it in his hands even more this season? Is there an appreciable difference in terms of what you've got to do to work off these guys effectively?
I don't think there's any difference, really. I think the biggest difference is there's not an AD on this team. You know? Like, you had LeBron and you had AD. So you really didn't know when you were touching the rock.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Because you're playing with two all-stars. On this team, it's Giannis, you know? So there's going to be your opportunities. And nobody's going to guard Giannis one-on-one. That's why I think it's getting back. You know, one of Kuz is really one of his best attributes of his game. Coming into the league, they allowed him to score a lot of easy buckets was, like I said earlier, being great at cutting to the basket, you know, like not just hanging out on the perimeter.
Yeah.
Like, you know, those 45 cuts could get you a lot of buckets.
Absolutely.
You know, like your man is going to be paying so much attention because they're probably thinking, okay, well, you're not a great 3-point shooter, so they're sagging off and they're falling asleep. Okay, boom, he's not seeing you. Boom, I'm cutting right behind him. Layup, dunk. You know, you got to punish teams in that way when you're playing with a guy like Giannis.
I think last season he came off of a few years of not really diversifying just how he got buckets. He was used to kind of being in his bag in certain spots, in certain ways, and then he'd get into his bag because he had been conditioned to do that. 21, points a game, 22 points a game, and then the last season, you get conditioned in your bag. I mean, if something's working for you, you're getting paid a lot of money to do it. I mean, seriously. So I have not lost hope at all on Kuz. I knew last year was aberration. I'm glad to hear Clint. And I wanted to ask you specifically though, the Germany situation. You guys were in Dusseldorf together for a couple of weeks. Like, what at this stage of the summer, like, are you working on the same stuff you would have worked with him in at the beginning of the summer, or is there a certain type of training camp tune-up stuff that you guys accomplished in Germany?
Conditioning. We're there for a week, like conditioning, really pushing himself, running hard, and then just like a big emphasis on like, we got to make shots. Like, we know we got to make shots. You know what I mean? Like, let's get ourselves tired and then let's make shots. You know, and just really plan. Like, it's so simple with somebody. Like, I always tell, like, man, Kuz is on $100 million deal. Like, he's made, after this deal, he'll have made like $135 million. Like, ain't nobody reinventing the wheel.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you ain't reinventing the wheel. Like, you ain't teaching, you ain't working with somebody that hasn't had a lot of success playing this game.
Facts.
At a high level, because they're not just handing out $100 million to NBA, regardless of what anybody wants to say out here that, oh, they're just giving away money. They're not. And so it's really just being good. One big thing I talk to him about all the time is staying off the ground this year. You know, not flailing and driving to the basket and being off balance. Like
falling down.
Playing off 2 feet. That bucket that he had last game in the beginning of the game, like, that's what I want to see more of.
Yeah.
Strong, get to the rim, 2 feet, balance, base, you know, under control, good touch, boom. Like, more of that. Not, I'm going in there, I'm hoping the ref bails me out. Yeah, I don't know. He could bail me out, but he probably won't. But let me just throw it up and see what happens. Let me fall down. Like, now the defense is at a disadvantage. Like, no, let's stay away from that. Let's stay away from that. And let's just be good at the little things. Like, let's just, like, this is year 9. And we're playing with a generational player. We got some young guys on the team that got a chip on their shoulder. Everybody's thinking that the team's not going to be very good this year. There's a lot of smoke surrounding the team right now on what Giannis is going to do. Once you step on the court, just go compete at a high level and show people who you are. That's my thing.
Now, do you set goals at all in terms of numbers, points per game, rebounds per game, assists per game, or do you even talk about that with a guy like Kuz, or you just kind of let things unfold how they're going to unfold?
The only thing I talk about is rebounding.
Yeah.
I already know, like, if he's playing hard and he's bringing that motor, he's going to score the ball.
Yeah.
Because he's always done that. You know what I mean? He came into the league averaging 15, 16 points his first couple years with a lot of really good players around him. Like, so if you play hard and you play with that great motor, like, Kuz will walk himself into every night looking up and he'll have almost 20 points.
Yeah.
Like, that's just who he is. Right. And people are going to look up and they're going to be like, oh, where'd that come from? I didn't see that out there. You know, because it's not going to be traditional. It's not going to be what you're used to or what everyone loves. But I don't care about that.
Now, for a guy like Kuz, does it matter if he's penciling at the 3 or the 4? Does it, I mean, just the number terminology?
Positionally.
Impact his mind at all?
Kuz is in Kuz's world. Kuz is not tripping on what nobody's saying about Kuz.
Does it matter if he starts or not? I mean, is that something that
he'll be fine? He'll be fine too. Like, obviously, I think everybody wants to start, but he's a pro. You know, like, he's a pro. Like, he's not, if he's starting, he's coming off the bench. Like, whatever the coach doc asks of him, he's going to do it, and he's going to do it at a high level. Like, how I feel this year because he knows. Like, dude, just play your game. You know, don't get caught up in it. That's been my whole thing. Don't get caught up into trying to show people. You're not AJ Green. You're not just a shooter.
Yeah.
No, like, you're not just a marksman. You can make shots, yes. And you do make shots. But that can't just be, your game can't revolve around whether your ball's going in or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, man, I'm pulling for Kuz this year. I believe, you know, hard work should be rewarded. And I just really believe he's one of the hardest working guys during the offseason. You can attest to that, Clint. And I just really feel like, you know, a year under his belt in this system playing with Giannis, playing for Doc, understanding what's expected of him.
Right.
I just really believe that you know, the shooting that first game, exhibition wise, was an anomaly. Yeah. That he's going to have himself a really, really good productive season for the Bucks this season.
Yeah, and preseason is about working yourself into shape too. Like he's sprinting the. I'm looking at the little things like how hard he's sprinting the floor. You know, you're getting out and you're running. Like you're trying to challenge yourself. Yeah you always want to make shots. No one's not going to sit up here and say you don't want to make shots every time you step on the floor. Obviously, you do. But more than anything, you're trying to get your legs under you. You're trying to get in game shape. You know, you're getting used to the timeouts, all of those things, the media, all that. You know, like the game stuff that you get under the lights that you're not getting even in a closed door scrimmage or. 5-on-5, getting up and down with the team. Like, we know, you guys know that when the lights come on, like, that's what preseason is about. Get your legs under you, you know, work on the, get your details in order. And then when the season starts, you be ready to roll.
Has he gotten leaner? Is it, or my imagination?
Yes, he has gotten leaner. He's in great shape.
Okay.
He's in great shape.
That jumped out at me the first time I saw him in the gym. It's like, wait a minute, this dude is, you know, he's cut and lean and just, you know, he looks like he's been working really hard on his body this offseason.
Every time he travels, his strength coach travels with him. His PT guy goes with him. Like, Kuz is investing in himself. Like, he's not, I know everyone sees him traveling and doing his, you know, like, he takes his eating serious, he takes his training serious. We're up early. You know, like, I'm used to getting up early, so it's not bad for me, but he's up early. He's not somebody that sleeps in, you know, like, he takes all that serious. Like, he's a professional, you know, no matter what anybody says, like, you know, there's going to be ups and downs in the pro career. And I to remind him, you didn't get to this point. Like, you went through worse than this to get here. Like, this is just another opportunity for you to get back on track. You know, MJ, how many years did you play in the league?
I played 10. I got hurt in my 10th year.
You have a certain amount of respect. So you know, like, I mean, there's like, I've had a couple guys that I worked with, Tony Snell and Quincy Pondexter. They both got to 9.
Yeah.
You know, 10 is that, 10 is that magic number. Obviously, you got that health insurance for life.
That pitch invested number. Yes, indeed.
You know what I'm saying? So you have a bigger respect for guys that are getting that longevity in the league.
Yes.
Like, so many people just push it to the side. Like,
It's crazy.
Having eight year.
Here's the thing with that, too. You just brought something to mind, because in my 9th year, so I trained with the guy, Malik Abdul-Mansour, who Chris knows very well, one of the hardest working guys, played football and basketball at UCLA when he was there, helped Kareem kind of master that skyhook. But Malik, Clint, he was a guy that convinced me that going into my 10th year, that I needed to not use as much legs on my jump shot. Don't jump as high, you know, and it's more about extension with the arm, getting the arm up. So we worked on, you know, on restructuring my jump shot that whole summer, and I struggled the first few games out of the gate. Then it finally clicked against the Dallas Mavericks. I had 10 points in the first 4 minutes. Then I hurt my neck. I ran into Benoit Benjamin. The last thing I remember is seeing two big double zeros, and I was down and out for the rest of my career. But my point being, in terms of where Kuz is now, how much of a change, or if there's any change in his game at this point of his career to make an allowance for where he is age wise and body wise and all that?
I think there's not really. I think his game just is like it's going to age gracefully, in my opinion, because it's not like he's not somebody that just has, like, he's not just relying on athleticism,
right?
Like, your motor, okay, vertically, like, Kuz isn't really a high flyer. Like, as long as his weight is where it is now, like, he's like, looking at, like I always talk about, like, Manu Ginobili, where he talked about, like, as you get older, you need to come back to what you're playing.
Skinnier.
You know, and you'll see that with Kawhi this year. His weight is much closer to when he first came in the league than it has been, because you're getting skinnier again because you're getting older. You're not gaining the weight as you get older. You're not keeping that weight. Like, no, you're losing the weight, coming back down to what you were closer to when you came in the league. So as long as Kuz keeps his weight where it's at and he stays healthy, which he has been, he hasn't had any, knock on wood, those type of deals happen to him. Like, I think, just because, like I said a million times on the podcast today, like, his game, when he's best, it's about his motor.
Yeah.
His motor. So as long as you can bring that motor and you can play, you could just outwork guys, you could play harder than guys every night, you'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, listen, I believe in it. Can't wait for Kuz's World to get untracked here this coming season. Clint Parks, we thank you for joining here. District, one of the foremost skill developers in the land. Clint Parks, you do a great job, man, and got to get you back on here and talk more basketball as the season progresses, man. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on today. I appreciate you guys. See you guys in the gym soon.
All right.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Clint.
Thank you, guys.